After wishing everyone Tzaraim Tovim. Good afternoon. Okay, we're on Daf Tzadi Hey, Omid Aleph. We're about, I would say, two-thirds down. And we're up to Ika Diamri. And I think the easiest way to find it is if you look at the bottom Tosis, the Asa, and you climb up above that Tosis, about five lines, the first word in the line is Kanis. And the fourth word in the line is Ika. Okay, now let's just summarize what we know. We had a Machlokas Tanoim in a Braisa, a few lines up, about a person who steals a sheep and he cuts off the shearings. He steals a cow and the cow gives birth. And the Braisa quotes three shitos in the Tanoim. We're going to focus now on Rabbi Meir's shita, the first of the three shitos. According to Rabbi Meir, the gazlan has to return not only the sheep, but also its shearings. Not only the cow, but also the calf that was born. Everything has to be included in the Veheshiv Esagzela Asher Gazal, including the Giza and the Vlat. The Chiddush in that is, according to the first Sad in the Gemara, that Shinui Bimkomo Omed, which means that Rabbi Meir does not recognize the significance of Shinui, and therefore everything belongs to the Nigzal. The Gemara says no, it could be that fundamentally Rabbi Meir holds that Shinui is Kone, and anything that was subject to the Shinui belongs to the Gazan. The Gazan is Kone B'Shinui, but the reason why the Gazan has to pay for everything is because of a Knas. And the Gemara establishes that Eino Chinami, Rabbi Meir holds, like the second side, that Shinui is Kone. And the reason why the Gazan has to pay back the Giza and the Vlad is because of Knas. That's what we got up to until now. Ika Diamri, others say Haloi Boilon. There was never a suffix at all about Rabbi Meir. It was always clear from the beginning that according to Rabbi Meir, Shinu is Kone. And the reason why the Gazan has to pay back everything, including the Giza and the Vlad, is because of Knas. That was clear. Why does the Gemara think that was clear? And here the Gemara quotes Rav. Mida apich Rav. Right? Apich is a verb, and the noun of which is called haficha, hafichas hashitos. Mepech shitos, which is a common phrase in the Gemara, all over Shas. Mepech shitos means that sometimes you have a braisa. The braisa quotes one man the Omer who says this, and another man the Omer argues and says that. And mepech shita means we switch it around. Rav applied that principle of mepech with regard to the Mishnah that we've been discussing. Okay, so let's go back and see the Mishnah. The Mishnah again is later on in Sadivav, but the Gemara quotes the Mishnah here. He stole an animal, and the animal got old. He stole an Eved, and the Eved got old. Is according to, before Rav's Mepech, according to the Tanakam, the Chachom hold, he pays the value of the animal as it were at the time of the Gzela, correct? And that means that Shinui is Kone. And Rabbi Meir says that basically the Chachomim are correct, which means that in the case of Beima Shezkina, he pays Kishas HaGzela. And he was Kone B'Shinui. However, Rabbi Meir disagrees in the case of Eved. Why does he disagree in the case of Eved? because Eved is hukash lekarka. You remember this discussion we had on Yom Shlishi? Eved is hukash lekarka, and we have a principle with regard to karka. Karka eina nigzelis, and since karka eina nigzelis, therefore the gazlan cannot be kona v'shinui, and therefore Rabbi Meir says to the Chachamim, although I agree with you in the case of Behemosh's Kina, he pays Kishas HaGzela because he's Kona B'Shinui, but that's because Metaltalin are subject to Gzela. But in the case of an Eved that has the same status as Karka, Karka ain't an Gzelis, therefore the Gazan is not Kona B'Shinui. So therefore, you the Chacham should agree that in the case of an Eved, he should have the right, the Gazlan has the right to say, Areshel Chol Fanecha. Right? Because there's no way he could be Kona B'Shinui. And again, please don't forget, I'm talking to myself here, the equation here, if Shinui is not Kona, that's the same as saying, Areshel Chol Fanecha. Right? That's an analogy or an equation that we have to operate with. Now comes along Rav, and he applies the principle of Mepach. Mepach. What is Mepach? Mepach means no. It was Rabbi Meir who was of the opinion that both in the case of Behemosh Hezkina and in the case of an Eved Shehizkin, he pays Kishas HaGzela, which means that he was Kona B'Shinui. The Chachamim were the ones who say that in the case of an Eved, there's no Kinyan Shini because Eved Ukush Karkak ain't an Exeles, and therefore he's going to say to the Nigzal that I'm not going to pay you Kishas HaGzela because since there's no Kinyan Shinui, it's HaReishal Chol Lefanech. And you're stuck with the Alta Eved that we spoke about last time. But anyway, from the fact that Rav employs the principle of Mepuch, we see clearly that according to Rabbi Meir, both in the case of Behema and in the case of Eved, the Gazlan was Kona V'Shinui, and therefore he pays Kishas HaGzela. Therefore, the Gemara presents the following conclusion. There was never a Safek about Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir certainly is of the opinion that Shinui is Kona B'Gzela. So then we're stuck with the following question then. Because the Gemara says, Iboilahu. We have a Suffolk in Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara is not denying that there was a Suffolk in Rabbi Meir. The Gemara is going to redefine the suffix in Rabbi Meir. What are the parameters of that suffix? So again, the suffix is not whether Rabbi Meir adopts the shita of Shinui Kona B'Gzela. Certainly he does. And according to Rav, that's clear. So what is the suffix? So again, let's read the Gemara. Mida apik Rav Vitani, according to Rav's version of the Mishnah, it says the following: Gozal parav is kina, vodav is kinu, mishalim kishas hagzel divrei Rabbi Meir. So clearly, Rabbi Meir adopts the position that Shinu is kona, and he pays kishas hagzela. V'chachomim omrim ba'avodim omer lo areishal chol fanech, because in avodim there is no kin in Shinui. Is vadai, we see clearly that Rabbi Meir Shinui is Kona, because Bain Bebehemu, Bain Be'eved, he is Mishan Kshas HaGzela, because he's Kona B'Shinui. Oh. So what then is the Suffolk in Rabbi Meir? Ve'hacha, what is the Suffolk here in Rabbi Meir with regard to the Giza and the Vlad? K'nasu de Kanisle. Surely Rabbi Meir is instituting a knas, and the Gazlan, instead of being able to pocket the shearings and the calf for himself, nevertheless he's going to have to return that to the Nigzal, and that's based on knas. So knas is mafkia. Knas completely suspends the mechanism of Shinui Kona. Kika Iboilon, what was the nature of the suffix then? Ha Iboilon, this was the suffix. Kika Kanis, when Rabbi Meir instituted this knas, and the Gazlo now has to fork over the Shvach back to the Nigzal. Is it only in the case of Mezid? Because if a person is guilty of deliberate robbery and theft, therefore he has to suffer the consequences of this penalty, and he's not going to enjoy any benefits from the crime, he's going to have to return the Shvach to the Nigzal. Avol b'shogeg, but if a person was a gazlan b'shogeg, okay, what's the case of a gazlan b'shogeg? How can you steal something and not be deliberate about it? The answer is you didn't know that what? That you were stealing it. How do you steal something without knowing that you're stealing it?
And it's yours.
So later on, Yechiel, we're going to have the following case. Now, I'm not sure if you're giving me the right answer or the Gemara later is the right answer. I'm not sure. But let me just mention the Gemara later on. The Gemara is going to say that later on, that if somebody goes ahead and buys merchandise, naively believing that the seller is the rightful owner of that merchandise, when he buys that, unbeknown to him, he is a gazlan. Which means that he has to return that object when he finds out that it was stolen back to the Nigzal. So you've got Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven is the rightful owner of the object. Shimon is the gazlan. Shimon goes ahead and sells it to Levi. Levi unintentionally buys a stolen object. That's going to be the Gemara later on. And perhaps we can even plug it in here. Levi now has the chiyuv of gazlan to pay the nigzal back and return the object to Reuven, the rightful owner. But we have to admit that Levi, in this case, was naive. In other words, he was not in any way deliberate and committing a crime of gzeila b'mezid. And the question now is, does Levi deserve to be penalized under the law of Knas? If, let's say, Levi bought this field from Shimon, thinking that Shimon is the rightful owner, and Levi now plows the land, and he sows, and he harvests the fruits, and so forth and so on. He did an honest-to-goodness, you know, farming business in what he thought was his karka. Now, of course, he has the chiv to be meshiv. He has to return the soda to its owner. But what about all the profits that accrued to this field, all the shvach? In some sense, we could say that he was kona b'shinui, meaning that the field that he stole was not a field with fruits on it. He produced those fruits, and that's a shinui. Let him have rights to the fruits. Oh, so I think the answer to that question is written here in this Gemara, vacillating back and forth. If you assume that a knas only applies to a mezid, then in this case where Levi purchased the field, and unbeknown to him it was a stolen field, Levi had no intention or deliberate intention to steal the field, then at least as far as the shvach is concerned, let him hold on to the shvach, because he was kona b'shinui. Meaning that this shvach did not exist in the world at the time of the gzela. Now he creates a new entity. Let him be kona that with a shinui. So should we say that although Rav Meir agrees that shinui is kona b'gzela, but there's a knas, we don't want the gazlan to benefit from his crime, but here he's not amazing. And therefore, we don't mind if we go back to the Ikar Adin, the primary halacha, that a gazan is kona b'shinui. O Dilma, should we say afilu b'shogeg nami konis? And this is what the Gemara calls, in general, kansinan shogeg otu mezit. Meaning that if we allow you to get away with it in the case of shogeg, then maybe you'll be tempted to do it b'mezit. Now, honestly, I don't see how that applies in gzela. And I'm hard pressed to understand why the Gemara thinks that Reb Meir would extend this knas and apply it even to a shogeg. The classical case of kansina and shogeg are two mazes. Is a person who violates the Shabbos, unbeknown to him it was Shabbos, and he wants to benefit from that chil Shabbos when he finds out that he was mechal Shabbos. So if he violated Shabbos b'mezid, we have a knas. And the knas says that he can't benefit from chil Shabbos. Let's say, for example, he cooked on Shabbos. We're not going to allow him to eat that food that was cooked on Shabbos. And that's in Perikira on Shabbos. But let's say he didn't know it was Shabbos, or he didn't know you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Whatever the case may be, it was a shogeg, bless you. So in that case, should we institute the knas and enjoin him from any benefits from the chil Shabbos? So there, in that case, I can understand kansina and shogeg are too mazed. In other words, a person who's benefiting from chil Shabbos, okay, he didn't do it deliberately, but once he gets into that mode, you know, that he eats food that was cooked on Shabbos, you know, that's going to be his cholent for Shabbos, then you never know what that could lead to. We wanted to make a knas that would incorporate and encompass all cases of benefiting from chil Shabbos. But I find it a little bit of a stretch to say that if a gazlan purchased goods, or in this case a field that we gave him, and he didn't know it was stolen, that if we allow him to make to be omeid, if we are mamid es adin, be kiikar adin, that he's kone v'shinui, therefore what, tomorrow he's going to go in and deliberately steal the field. Now it's to say that a person shouldn't benefit from Shabbos, from chil Shabbos, nicha, I can understand. No benefit from chil Shabbos. You know, Shabbos is a day where there's no malach, you know, to try to enjoy the benefits of a malach that was done on Shabbos, that's a problem.
Could it be that we don't want a person who steals on purpose to start bringing an argument that he didn't really know?
Ah.
It's from that way around.
In other words, even if we know he's a shogeg, but maybe the mazid is going to claim he's a shogeg and well, he'll fool us. He'll pull the wool off.
Maybe into all sorts of complications.
Maybe, perhaps.
Maybe he was offered the field at half its value and he should have done a due diligence and sort of found out that way.
Well, that shot I like very much. That I like Alfred, right? Can I call you by your first name? I don't know. Do you know David, by the way? You look like, I think...
We don't have him somewhere.
You're Lansman, you know, I think. Yeah. No, aren't you both from London? Am I right?
Yes, yes.
Well, you're from Manchester, I forget. From London.
I'm from London, yeah.
You're from London. So. Yeah. Oh, your daughter's in Manchester.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, London's a big city.
Okay. Too big.
It's a great Stadt. It's like somebody asked me, do you know Schwartz from New York? You're from New York, so you should know Schwartz, you know. You open up the New York telephone directory and there are pages and pages of Schwartz, you know.
What did the Gemara say we should do with Shimon?
Wait, just one second. I just want to digest what you said before, and then you'll ask me. Maybe. Oh, so perhaps what we're saying is the following. That shogeg is also amazing. Not the way David said it, that the mazid is going to pawn it off and tell us, oh, he's going to pull the wool over our eyes and tell us he's a shogeg, but that shogeg himself is a mazid. What does it mean that shogeg is a mazid? As you point out very well, did he do his due diligence? You know, again, I'll give you a case from New York. You know, in New York, when you meet people on the street, I'm not going to make any racial comments over here, but they sell you appliances on the street at a slash price, you know, you can suspect that there's something illegal going on over here. Right. So how did he have this, you know, this slash price, you know, thing? Maybe there were indications that perhaps this guy that you think is an honest seller is not such an honest seller. Yeah, now what you were saying about Reb Shimon?
We talk about Reuven, Shimon, and Levi.
But
Shimon is the one who's committed fraud, and the Gemara doesn't mention at all anything that happens to him.
Well, actually, what we're going to get to in just a few minutes is that if indeed Levi has to pay Reuven not only the karka that he stole, but also the value that he produced from that karka, which could be a significant amount of money, Shimon is going to have to reimburse Levi, not only for the money that he pocketed from Levi, which clearly he has to give back to Levi, but even the profits he has to pay for. So let's say the karka is worth 100, the profits are worth 50. You know, an annual produce from a karka that's worth 100 is 50, let's say. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, but whatever it might be. So now Shimon the Ganav is going to have to pay Levi not only the 100, which that's not a chiddush because Shimon's holding on to that 100, right? He embezzled it. But he also has to pay him the 50. That's what we're going to see in a few minutes, you know, just to anticipate. So I wouldn't say that Shimon is getting away with murder. You know, Shimon is also in the, you know, in the hot seat, so to speak. Okay. Oh, Toshma. Okay. Now, what we're about to learn here in this Toshma is a brisa that has a list of five cases where a Baal Chov can collect only from Bnei Chori and not from Mishubadim. So now, Rabosa, you'll have to answer the following question. Do I need to explain that? Now, be honest with me.
It would be helpful.
It would be helpful, okay. For this, I need like a gigantic blackboard, but which I don't have. But we'll try to do the best we can. Okay. Let's say Reuven lends Shimon 1,000. Okay, Shimon is what's called a malvo, the Baal Chov. So certainly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Shimon has rights to collect that chov even from the shirt off his back. That's called Bnei Chori. Meaning, if Reuven, I forgot who was the lender and who was the borrower, but let's say Reuven was the borrower, then Reuven is Meshubah to pay Shimon the Malve, the lender, even if it means he has to give him the shirt off his back. That's called Bnei Chori. Now another term for Bnei Chori, which may come up in Asugi, is called Shibud HaGuf. Shibud HaGuf means an absolute commitment to pay the chov. Unfortunately, we know in society today, people who borrow money and maybe they did intend to pay back, maybe they didn't, I don't know, let's be dumb and look how schuz, but at the end of the day, they don't repay their chovos. The Torah believes in what's called the Shibud HaGuf. My Rebbe once said that all of the Torah, all the 613 mitzvahs, when we said Nasim v'Nishma, it's a Shibud HaGuf. Shibud HaGuf means I'm going to go to the ends of the world, if need be, to live up to my commitment. It's a Zemusa Shmuz. That's called Bnei Chori. Then there's another thing called Mishubad. Mishubad means that if the Lover, the lender, the borrower, owned a certain property at the time that he took the loan, that property is leaned, right, L-I-E-N, is a Shibu, is Meshubad, to the Malve, to the lender, such that even if the Lova sells it to a third party called Lokeach, now, if the Lova defaults on his loan, and the loan has to be paid back, the Malva could knock on the door of the Lokeach, and force him to cough it up and collect and confiscate his property. That's called Mishubad. Now, I don't want to confuse you, but you should make a note of this, that Mishubadim only applies to real estate, which is called Karka, and not to Metaltum. So, for example, if the Lova owned a diamond ring, and he sold it to so-and-so, that ring is not Meshubah, there's no Shimon HaMetaltelin for the Baal Chov meaning the mouth. So far so good? Mm-hmm. Now, what we're learning in the Braisa is a list of five cases which are the exceptions to the rule. And in these five cases, the Baal Chov, when he comes to collect, can only collect Migufo, meaning from Bnei Chorin, and he cannot collect from the Lokeach. Even if it's karka. Okay. Now, the most important case of the five cases for all of Nizikim, meaning all of Dini Mominus, is probably the least important for our purposes, but you have to know it anyway. Because that's what it means to learn Gemara. Gemara is Talmud Bavli. It's all bowl. You know, everything is all tzavish. And that is the question of Achrayis Tosof. What does this mean? Back in the day, when a lova borrowed money from a malva, a sofer, a scribe, was commissioned to take out a piece of vellum, of parchment, and commit this chov to writing. The lova then delivers this shtar, this document, over to the malva. The malva will use this document for two purposes. It serves a double purpose. Number one, in event that the lova denies that he ever borrowed the money, the very fact that the malva could produce the shtar means we believe the malva, we don't believe the lova. Number two, if the lova sold property to a lokeach, the malva takes the shtar, and with the shtar he could confiscate and, shall I say, exercise or implement his rights of shibudim to collect and confiscate the karka from the lokeach. But the sofer, the scribe who writes that document, okay, and now here my next sentence is gonna be very, let's say, temporary. What's the word I'm looking for?
Provisional.
What's it called?
Provisional.
Provisional, right? A provisional statement, because I'm gonna say the opposite, because there are really two possibilities. Possibility number one is that the sofer has to go back to the lova and ask the lova if this agreement has a shibud in it. And if the lova says yes, then the sofer writes down in the shtar that it's meshubad. For example, if you ever listen carefully, which nobody does, of course, to the reading of the ksuba by whoever gets that kibud of reading the ksuba under the chuppah, if you listen carefully, you'll hear v'achrayis, these words, v'achrayis shtar ksuvtada. Then it says, that's not relevant to us. But just those words, v'achrayis shtar ksuvtada, this ksuba. What does it mean? It means that if the husband divorces his wife, okay, there are many other cases, but, and now she wants to collect the ksuba, let's say it was the first marriage, so she collects Masayim, this is an enormous amount of money. And guess what? The Megaresh, the Baal, doesn't have a penny to his name. She can go ahead and collect with this Shtar Ksuba from anyone who purchased during the course of his lifetime, you know, the karka that was sold by the Baal, by the husband, over to the Lokeach. And why? Again, according to this first provincial statement, because it says those words in the Ksuba. So when the Rav HaMasada Kiddushin reads the Ksuba or summarizes the Ksuba, highlights the Ksuba in front of the to the Chasan, in front of the Eidim, he has to tell, according to this position, he has to notify the husband that he is now taking upon himself achrayu, such that if he has karka, that karka is meshuba to the isha for her ksuba. That's called shtar achray shtar ksuvtada. However, now we go to the second possibility. Guess what? The sofer left out those three words, achray shtar ksuvtada shtar chov zeh. So what do we do? Do we punish the sofer? You know, we fire him, he loses his commission. What do? So according to the second statement, you know what? We don't need it. We can do without it. Even if the sofer omitted it, it's as if he wrote it. Why? Because every halva is assumed, unless we know otherwise, to the contrary, that there's achrayas. When a lova borrows money from the malva, he wants to give the malva, and the malva demands the greatest maximum security he could have so that his money is not al keren tzvi, it's not lost. And therefore the premise is that there was an agreement with achrayas. The sofer didn't write it. That's called toz sofer. That was a mistake of the sofer. Do something to him. Punish him. You know, make him wear a dunce cap. But the achrayas is built in. The first assumption was, the first statement was, no. The sofer will write achrayas only if he was explicitly mandated to do so. because there was an active agreement that this loan should have within it achrayus, and she moved it. Then the sofer writes it. If the sofer omitted it, that's proof positive that there was never an agreement on achrayus and she moved it. That's called achrayus lav tov sofer. The omission of the achrayus from the shtar was deliberate, and therefore there's no wherewithal on the part of the malv of the malchov to collect from the lekuchos. The lekuchos will say, "Let me see the shtar," and guess what? The word achrayus was left out of the shtar. No go. There's no sheep. According to the second shot, achrayus tov sofer. The sofer made a mistake. He inadvertently omitted achrayus, but there's an assumption on our part that there is achrayus. Okay. This brisa that lists five cases in which the shibud doesn't apply, and the Baal Chov collects from Bnei Chori, and not from Karak, not from Shibudim, this brisa is of the opinion that achrayus lav tov sofer. And therefore, if the sofer omitted achrayus in the shtar, it means that the deal was, the agreement was, that there won't be any achrayus. That the lover will pay based on shibud aguf, even the shirt off his back, but the lokeach is off the hook. There's no shibud. So again, whatever the lover has in his possession, that's meshubed b'tor shibud aguf. If he has money in his bank account, if he has a fancy wardrobe, if he has a piece of karka, all the above are meshubadim, as long as they're in the possession of the lover. That's called achrayus lav tov sofer. Now the malva comes to the lover, and the entire assets of the lover don't even come to halfway, I'm just dramatizing, of the halva of the chov. The malv is out in the cold. He has no recourse to collect from Mishubadim for the lekuchos. Lekuchos are off the hook. Why? Because the shtar that he produces has omitted the word achrayus in it. That holy word achrayus was omitted from the shtar. And that's achrayus lav tov sofer. And that will cover on this list of five the last two cases of the five. The fourth case is, if you take a look, just fast forward a little, it says get is a synonymous word for a shtar. A get chov she'ein bo achrayus, meaning the sofer left out achrayus, and therefore the chov is only collectible from mishubad, from bnei chorin and not from mishubadim. And finally, the fifth case is ksubas isha she'ein bo achrayus. If those words achrayus shtar ksubtado were omitted from the ksuba, then the isha will have no wherewithal to collect from the lekuchos of the baal. Okay. So that's a shas sugya. I mean, if you learn about metziah, that's a gigantic sugya. Whether or not every alva is assumed to have shibud and achrayus, and if the sofer omitted it, that's the sofer's fault or no? There's got to be an explicit ischayvus that includes shibudim, and if the sofer left it out, he had a reason to do so because this chov is not collectible from the shibudim. That's a gigantic shas sugya. Not too relevant to us now, except for one technical point, is that this price must be attributed to Rabbi Meir. Because if you learn about Mitzvah, you'll see that the Tana who holds achrayus lav tov sofer happens to be Rabbi Meir. And that's going to be critical for us, because we want to know what's Rabbi Meir's shita in Knas, as far as Shvach is concerned. So for this, we go back to the first three cases. So Chamisha Govin Min HaMechororin, Mechororin means Bnei Chorin, and not from Mishubad, the Eluhin. The first is called Peros, we'll see, the Gemara is going to discuss that. The second one is Shvach Peros, that's the most important one for our purpose. And the third one, this you have to learn Masechta Ksubis, that's called Mekabel of Lozen Ben Ishto Ubas Ishto. That means if a man marries a woman who has children from a previous marriage, it's a second marriage, he has two choices. He can either accept upon himself the responsibility, the financial responsibility, as if these children of his wife from a different husband were his own children, or he can say, no, I have to support my children, I have to support your children, I'm not taking it upon myself. The case here is that he took upon himself a hischayvus in the ksuba, that when he married her, I'm going to support not only you, I'm going to support your children from a previous marriage. And now, when he, let's say, divorces her, or she die, or he dies, and she comes to collect the ksuba. She wants to collect not only the monum asayim of the ksuba, she wants to collect also mizonos, support for her children. But yet the achrayus was not explicit. And unless he was makabel himself explicitly achrayus, the assumption is that he's responsible to support them, but there's no shibut, which means there's no possibility of her or her children collecting from his lekuchos, meaning if he sold his property. And the reason for this is because of something called chov she'eno kotzev. We can only hold the lokeach responsible when we could say to the lokeach, listen, buddy, you bought a piece of karka and you knew or you should have known, due diligence, right? You should have realized that there's a lien on this karka, and the lien is to the tune of X, whatever that X is, 100,000, let's say. It's an enormous amount of money. That's called a chov kotzev. Kotzev means it's written in the books. We know exactly to the last dime, to the last penny, how much is the loan. Not so in the case of mizonos. Mizonos is called a chov she'eno kotzev. There's no way of knowing. For example, he has to pay this support for the rest of his life. How long is he going to live? Or for example, the price of mizonos just goes up, goes down. Or maybe she had children, some of the children are financially independent, and therefore you don't need to support them, other children are totally dependent, etc., etc. Bekitzar, Maisa, the bottom line is called a chov she'eno kotzev. In the case of a chov she'eno kotzev, you can't hold the lokeach who purchased this land responsible to back up the chov, because it's a chov she'eno kotzev. Okay, that's again shas. But now what's relevant to us here in Bava Kamma? The Gemara says, "Man shamet le di Omar achrayus lav tos sofer Rabbi Meir." It happens to be Rabbi Meir who's of the opinion, as reflected in this brisa in cases number 4 and number 5, that if achrayus was left out of the shtar, that's a deliberate. We have to assume that that's a deliberate move on the part. A passive move on the part, a deliberate omission, we'll call it, on the part of the sofer, because achrayus is not included and shibudim are not included in this chov. And we're not going to say that, well, you know, the chov automatically generates shibudim and achrayus, and the sofer omitted it because he deserves to be patched. No. We're going to say that there was a deliberate omission on the part of the sofer, that's called lav tos sofer, and once there's a shtar, even though achrayus does not appear in the shtar, nevertheless, the bal chov can, the malva can collect, or in the case of the isha can collect even from lekuchos, and lekuchos have no right to say, I'm sorry, that the bal chov or the isha cannot collect from lekuchos, right? And the bal chov has no right to say, well, it was the sofer's error that he omitted it. No, it was lav tos sofer. It was a deliberate omission on the part of the sofer because there was never shibudim in this chov. The Mefarshim go to town. Why did the Brice have to list both cases 4 and 5? Basically, a ksuba is a classical shtar chov. There's no difference between a ksuba and any shtar chov. And therefore, if you've already told me that in the case of a shtar chov, if there's no achrayus in the shtar, then the lekuchos are off the hook, there's no shibudim, then ipso facto, I apply that to ksuba's isha. Or the other way around. Had you told me ksuba's isha is achrayus lav tos sofer according to Reb Meir, and therefore the lekuchos are off the hook, then by definition, I would ipso facto derive the conclusion that the same halach applies to a shtar chov. So the basic answer is as follows. In the case of a shtar chov, the lova wants to satisfy the malva. Correct? The lova wants to satisfy the malva. And therefore, what does the lova want to provide for the malva? Maximum security, which means shibud. In the case of ksubas ish, it's a whole different story. Here we're not dealing with an agreement that was entered by the balchov and the mischayev, but rather what's called tnai bezdin. Every marriage has to have a ksuba, the Chachamim instituted a ksuba. There's no marriage without a ksuba. In fact, if a woman loses her rights to ksuba for whatever reason, she did something that's unacceptable, if he wants to maintain that marriage, he's going to have to write another ksuba, because he can't live with her without a ksuba. That's called trai best. So here, when it comes to whether Achrayus told Sofer or not, I need two chidushim. I need one chidush to say that Achrayus lav told Sofer in the case of a shtar chov, which means that Rav Meir goes as far as to say that even though you could have argued, and that's the Chachom's argument, that the lover for sure accepted upon himself a shibud nechasim in order to satisfy it and to make sure that the malva would complacently rely on the shibud and give him maximum security. Nevertheless, no, Rav Meir is mechadish in this case that no, despite the fact that this agreement is entered into voluntarily by both the lova and the malva, nevertheless, the lova doesn't have to guarantee necessarily the malva maximum security and shibudim. And therefore, if the sofer omitted Achrayus in the shtar, that was a deliberate decision because Achrayus loved her sofer and the lova never agreed to go that far and be mischayev with a shibud karka. But in the case of shtar ksuba, which is a tnai bezdin, therefore, I don't have that chiddush of Rav Meir. I don't know. Maybe in the case of tnai bezdin, Rav Meir would have to agree that when bezdin establishes this chov called the ksuba has to look exactly this way. And if the sofer omitted it, then it's his toast, it's his mistake. So I need another chiddush that even in ksubas isha, which is formulated by tnai, generated by tnai bezdin, even so, there is not necessarily, within the framework of tnai bezdin, there's no absolute requirement of shibudim. There's going to have to be an agreement on the part of the baal. And that's what the Rav HaMasada Kedushin has to evoke that agreement in front of two Eidim before the Ksuba is signed, that he agrees not only to Shibud Aguf, to pay the Monu Masayim, etc., etc., but also to a Shibud Nechasim, even to a Shibud Karka. So again, just to summarize, we need two Chidushim here. We need one Chidush in the case of what? Of a shtar chov, that even though you would have thought, and that's the Chachamim Shita, that automatically we have to assume that there was Achrayus and the Lova wanted to placate the Malva, and therefore it's Tol Sofer. No, says Rabbi Meir, I have a Chiddush for you, Tol Sofer. It's not necessarily so that the Lova was Mischayev for Shibudim, unless he explicitly commissioned the Sofer to write Achrayus. And in the case of shtar ksuba, we have a chiddush that even though the shtar ksuba was organized by tnai bezdin, bezdin did not necessarily require a chiyuv achrayus and a shibud nechas. Okay, but now we get to the case varektani vektani peros ushvach peros. Okay, so what's peros and shvach peros? So the Gemara says, Hechidon, what is the case? And this is the case that I gave you a few minutes ago. Kigon, shegazal sodom echavero umacharo liacher. We'll call him Shimon. He's the bad guy today. Shimon stole a piece of karka from Reuven, and he sold it to Levi. Vishbicha, and Levi, the lokeach, the buyer, fertilized the land, and he had a cow thresh the karka and so forth and so on. At the end of this whole process, he was able to produce a massive amount of peros. Now Reuven, the nigzal, comes and he wants to reclaim his field. Vaharehi yotza mitachas yodo, meaning Levi has to fork over the field, obviously, to Reuven, the rightful owner of the field. But not only does he fork over to Reuven, as we'll soon see, the field, he has to fork over the field with its shvach, with the peros on the field. Now, Levi, the lokeach, spent an enormous amount of money and effort to reap the benefits of this field. He has a right to get reimbursed from it. For it, to whom can he turn to get reimbursed? No, not to Reuven, but to Shimon. Okay, Yechiel, what you said is not is not absolutely wrong, because there is a sugya which we'll get to, Mishnah, called Hayorid Latok Sadi Shal Chaver, but we're not up to that. Right now we're up to the Gazlan. And that's what he says, Ukshugofer, when the Lokeach now collects, and here we're turning to Tzadi Heyam and Beis, he collects this reimbursement from the Gazlan, Gove es hakeren min achasim mishubadim, vi es hashevach min achasim b'nei chorin. Okay, now, I have to tell you the following story here. The Gazlan, Shimon, has possessions that are rightfully his. Not everything that he sells is stolen goods. You know, if it's Monday, it's stolen goods. If it's Thursday, maybe it's rightfully his. Now, when the Gazlan sold Karka X to Levi, that was stolen. That was stolen Karka. But previously, subsequently, he sold a karka to Yisachar. Okay, Yisachar bought a karka that actually belonged to Shimon. Again, let's not assume that every karka that Shimon owns is stolen karka. Oh. Now, when Levi wants to get reimbursed from Shimon, so he wants to get paid back for the shvach as well. And if the Gazlan, in this case, if Shimon has no money to pay Levi for the Shvach, then does Levi have recourse to Yisachar, who bought a field from Shimon the Gazlan, but again, it was Shimon's rightful field, and claim that I want to be reimbursed for a chov that Shimon owes me, namely for the Shvach, and I have rights to collect from Mishubadim? And on that, the Brisa says he does not have rights, because he can only be gover the keren. He can be gover the value of the field. Again, what did he pay for the field? He paid 100,000 for the field. That's what he gave to Shimon. That's what Levi gave to Shimon. That 100,000 is an absolute classical chov, which Shimon the Gazlan owes to Levi, the Lokeach, and I'll explain why. And what I mean by an absolute chov is that if for that 100,000 he has to back it up, meaning Shimon has to back up, right, the reimbursement to Levi, when we find out that it was really Reuven's kach, that chov of 100,000 has to be backed up and secured from Yisachar. Meaning, if in event that Shimon does not have the cash, or does not have Pnei Chori, any properties or any value in his possession that would equal to that 100,000, the differential will be made up by Yisachar. That's as far as the Karen is concerned. Karen meaning the value of the field itself at market value when Shimon sold it to Levi. But now Levi has a right to claim not only the 100,000, but also the 50,000 because of the Shvach. That he can only collect from Shimon, and he cannot collect it from Levi. Now, when Levi bought the field from Shimon, did he know that Levi was a Gazlan? Did I say that right? Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. Did he know, that Shimon was a Gazlan? The answer is, let's assume no. So that Levi now is what we call a shogeg. Now, when Levi produces shvach, that shvach is a new entity, and therefore he should be koneh with shinui. And we've already established beyond a shadow of a doubt that Reb Meir holds that a gazlan is koneh with shinui, shinui koneh. Nor of us, we don't know if when the gazlan produces shvach, whether or not the Gazan has rights to the Shvach through Kinyan, when the Gazan produces Shvach, does he have rights to the Shvach? The answer is, says Rabbi, no, he's going to have to return the Shvach, but that's only perhaps in the case of Mazid. Here we have a situation in which Levi produced Shvach, and Levi is a Shogeg. Let's assume. The Gemara is going to call him an Amoritz. We'll see why, because it all depends on whether Karka is Nigzelis or ain't Nigzelis. And Levi is not a great Talmud Chacham, and he's unaware of the dinim that Karka ain't Nigzelis, and therefore he's a pure Shogeg. He had every right to assume not only And this, Alfred, is very important for your due diligence of before. Not only does he have a right to assume that this field was rightfully owned by Shimon the seller, here maybe he could have done a little bit more due diligence, but he certainly has a right to assume that even in the worst case scenario, chas v'shalom, if Shimon had stolen this property, the shvach is certainly his. Why? Because a gazan is kone v'shinui. What he didn't know, Levi, was that a gazan kone v'shinui doesn't apply in this case because karka ain't an exelis. That he was unaware of. But in any event, by producing the fruits of this field, he's created a shinui. He should be kone b'shinui. And nevertheless, the brisa is certainly assuming that the peros go back to Reuven, its original owner. And Levi cannot claim, well, those peros are mine because I was kone b'shinui. Right, that's the Gemara's diuk over here. The Gemara says that the Asa Bal Ara, that's Reuven, the owner of the karka, is Shakil Ara Are v'Shivchei. He not only confiscates to retrieve his karka from Levi, but even confiscates and retrieves the Shevach, even the Peros. Right, because otherwise, what claim would Levi have against Shimon the Gazlan vis-a-vis the Peros? And we said that that claim is only from Bnei Chori, but not from Mishubadim, correct? But nevertheless, he does have a claim to get back and be reimbursed for his Shevach. But why does he have to reimburse? Why wasn't he kone the Shevach for himself? The answer is that the Baal Ara, meaning Reuven, comes back and he collects not only the field from Levi but also the Shvach. My love, isn't it a case of Biyama Oretz? We're not talking about Levi, who's the great Torah scholar. The Lo Yod, that he's unaware, Levi, the Karka. Right? The Lo Yoda. Whether or not the karka exelis ain't an exelis. In other words, and therefore, he, Levi, was of the mistaken impression that he could be kone this karka, and if he could be kone the karka, meaning even if, in the worst case scenario, this karka is stolen karka, and it doesn't belong to Shimon who sold it, who pawned it off to him, but it belongs to someone else, nevertheless, he could be kone shvach b'shinui. And therefore, we have to classify Levi, the buyer, in terms of the Shvach, as a shogeg. Vafilu hachi. Nevertheless, even though he should be kodeh b'shinui, ka'asi balchov v'shokali ara v'shvachi, the balchov forces Levi to fork over the Shvach. Again, the author of this price, as we proved from Achrayas Lav Tosof, is Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir is imposing a knas on Levi, forcing Levi to give up the Shvach, which l'chora he should be kone b'shinui. And why is this knas being imposed? So that Levi should not benefit by stealing something, but at the end of the day, he was a shogeg. He was not a deliberate thief. Amri, the Gemara says, lo. The case is not that Levi was an Amoretz, but rather, Levi was a lokeach talmid chacham, v'yoda, and he knows very well the karka in exelis, and therefore the karka belongs to its original bailim, and therefore the shvach that he produced, he had no right to produce because it belongs to the Bailim, and he can't be kone b'shinui in any event because it's karka ein exelis. And that's a case of mezid that this lokeach, again, when it says Talmud Chacham, I'm not sure if it means he's the Gadol Hador. Talmud Chacham means he's well aware of the fact that if in event that this karka is stolen, he has no rights to the shvach. He has no rights to take stolen karka and produce fruits because this karka ain't an exelis. It doesn't lend itself to gzela. And the shvach goes back to the original bailim. So he knew that the shvach goes back to the bailim. I mean, obviously you could ask a question here. Maybe maybe he's such a mazid here that maybe even the Gazlan should be off the hook. We said that the Gazlan himself, certainly as far as B'nai Chori, has to reimburse the Lokeach, not only for the Karka and the Karen, but also for the Shvach. So the answer to that is Achrayus, meaning there's a halacha that when you sell a piece of property, you assume Achrayus. Correct? Even according to Rabbi Meir, who holds Achrayus lav toso, for that's in the case of a chov, it's not necessarily so that the love accepts upon himself vis-a-vis the malva a shibud nechosim and a forcing that any lokech that he will sell his land to is now a guarantee or a credit, you know, a guarantor for his loan. That's not necessarily so. But in the case of Mechira, even Rav Meir agrees that there is an acceptance of Achrayus. Therefore, as far as the Gazlan is concerned, and Alpha, you were worried before about the Gazlan, how we can let him off the hook. Yeah, so we're not going to let him off the hook at all. And even if there's some element I'll use negligence, but I'm looking for even a stronger word, on the part of the lokeach for working so hard and expending so much money and resources to produce shvach from karka that's ain't an exelis, but nevertheless vis-a-vis the gazlan, if it turns out that this karka was stolen, again, we're not saying that the lokeach knew for a fact it was stolen. He assumed, you know, given the process of buying and selling, that the seller was giving him was not cheating him and not he was not embezzling, but he was giving him a good valid fee. Again, he could have done more research, but on the side that it was stolen, so it's fascinating. The Gazlan, well, let's go back. The Lokeach, meaning Levi, has no recourse to claim ownership and retain the payros vis-a-vis the original owner, meaning Reuven, the owner of the field, rightful owner, that he can't do. I ganav kona b'shinui. The answer is that karka ain't an exelis, so he can't be kona b'shinui. So that karka has to go back to the bialim. Okay, but now he has recourse to get reimbursed for that shevach from the gazlan. Why? Because the gazlan was the mocher, and halacha is that a mocher is what? Is a mechira is what? With achrayus, and therefore what the mocher takes upon himself is that in event that the karka is stolen or taken away from the lokeach, he will reimburse him not only for the keren, but also for the shevach, also for the shvach. Just give me one more minute here, because I think I left out one important thing. Right. So I'm just going to read to you this note here on the bottom. He writes, Mechiras sode koleles imach rayus she'im timtza. If it turns out that the field was stolen, and therefore it's going to be confiscated, from the buyer, Yishan lo agazlan, lo rak es dmei asoda, el af es dmei asoda im aperos sheshbiach alokeach bohen. Okay, that's the note that I wanted to add over here.
How can you say that?
But just give me one more minute. I'm sorry, Alan. Something bothering me here. Just one second. Sorry. What happened over here? He sold the karka. The karka was stolen. Oh, so on both sides. Here's what I. Okay. How we doing? Not too great. Okay. Sorry. I've also said it's a complicated sugya. I didn't write the script. Here's the most complicated part of the sugya. The Gemara is assuming here that Levi is being penalized here. And there's a knas that's being imposed to him vis-a-vis the knas. I'm sorry, vis-a-vis the shvach. Right? The shvach is being, so to speak, taken away, ripped away from Levi, the buyer, by virtue of a knas. And the Gemara wants to assume that if Levi's an Amoretz, he's a Shogeg, and therefore he doesn't deserve to be penalized. And the Gemara answers, no, we're talking about a Talmud Chacham. But I don't understand. I'm missing one major chunk of this Gemara. Why is it that the Gemara applies the principle of Knas to Levi, since Karka ain't an Exeles, so then there's no such thing as a Kenyan Shinui here. When did Rava, I'm sorry, when did Rabbi Meir institute a Knas? In what case? There was a Gazlan. He was Kona Bishinui, the Giza, and the Vlad. And Rabbi Meir forces him to cough it up and return it to the Nigzal because he's a no good Gazlan. Correct? In the case, for example, of Karka, then there's nothing to discuss. We don't have to be mafkia the shmach from the Gazlan because the Karka ain't an exelus. And there is no Kinyan Shinui in Karka. Here we're talking about a case of Karka. And if we're talking about a case of Karka, then what rights does the Lokeach have to the shvach of the Karka?
None.
Just one second. What rights? Such that we need to subject him to a knas. Mm-hmm. And then the Gemara is going to declare, well, does he deserve a knas? Is he amazing? He's a Talmud Chacham. Or he doesn't really deserve the knas because he's an Amor. Forget about that. What shaykh is knas here? The whole concept of knas is inapplicable. Because we're not talking about gzela, because karka ain't an exelis. How can he possibly be kona bishvach? Again, I have to introduce here the sugya that Yechiel that I was hinting to before, that yorid l'tol sadish al chavir. If a person goes down to the field of his friend, uninvited, and he improves the field, then the law is that he has rights to shvach. Again, it's a little bit complicated. What we do is that from the shvach, we pay him for his expenditures, right? So let's say it cost him $30,000 in work and labor and time. Now it's sold on the market for $50,000. What we'll do is we'll split that $50,000 between the owner and the Yored L'Tot Sada Shal Chavero. The Yored L'Tot Sada Shal Chavero will get the 30 out of the 50 because those were his Hotzaot. And the owner of the field will get the extra 20, which is called the Shvach Sha'ole Al HaYitzia. Here in this case, Levi should be considered, since Karkain and Exelis, as a Yored L'Tot Sada Shal Chavero. And therefore, his judgment should be such that we have to pay him off for his yitziah. When it says here that he doesn't get the shvach, it means he gets nothing. Why does he get nothing? He should have rights to claim against Reuven, the owner of the field, that pay me chach yitziah, b'toris yorid b'tok son shalchan peiro. On that there's a knas. Frank the Gemara, why should there be a knas on that? So again, the concept of shvach here is different than the concept of shvach that we've been dealing with until now. Till now we've been dealing with a gazan who steals a para, and now he has shvach, he has the vlad. Now we're talking about a case not of a gazan, because karka ain't an exelis, but the word shvach is borrowed from the sugya of yored l'tol sada shel chavero. He has rights, this yored, to a certain percentage, a certain element in the shvach, and yet he gets nothing. Why does he get nothing from the owner of the field, from Reuven? The answer is knas. Frank the Gemara, knas is an amoretz. He thought that Karka is Nigzelis, and therefore his shvach is his. He has every right to produce shvach. Even if it's a stolen piece of Karka, he's Kona Bishinu. The answer is, he's an Amoretz. He didn't know that Karka is Nigzelis. So you see that we're going to cancel him, even though he's what? He's a Shogeg. And for the Gemara Nein, we're talking about what? A Talmud Chacham, and therefore he's amazing. Okay, Rabosai, I apologize that I really should stop the shiur in time for preparation for Mincha.